Issa, thank you for being here, for sharing your time with me for this purpose. I want to begin with a prayer, and I pray that our conversation can reach the hearts of anyone during the time right now who could use some support and some lightness, and most of all, companionship. So I pray that our companionship can be lended as the companionship for anybody who comes through and listens. Most of all, we just want a deepening experience, a heart-opening experience. Ashe.
Amen. Thank you, Amber, for inviting me to speak and talk about, you know, just our journey, our friendship, our companionship. And I think this will be very nice to see where we go.
I know, right?
Reflect.
It's just a conversation between you and I. And I feel like even when we're just talking, just catching up, it's a podcastable conversation.
We're so full of wisdom and words. I think it's, you know, our lives.
Yeah. And I think just honest friendship. And I mean, as you grow, you realize that not every friendship is going to be like that. There are just some friends, some people that you meet, your spirits cross paths, and that's it. We can go like months without talking, and when we link up again, it's just love. Like,
exactly.
And not only love, but you and I seem to always be on the same soul trajectory. Like, seriously. What you're experiencing, I'm experiencing, and it's not even an external, because externally our lives look different.
Yeah.
But the internal awareness of mm-hmm. where we're going, it's always similar. And man, that's a gift.
It is, because who would have thought, you know, I mean, just about Dustin, once again, your journey, like you said, we've always pretty much kind of been on the same path. And had you not just walked boldly and also invited me to understand where you're coming from and, you know, what you've read and places you've gone, that inspired me, you know. And had I not come to listen to you talk and be welcome into those spaces that you opened me to, I wouldn't be here, right? And I wouldn't have been able to be patient or be aware of, one, this power that we have, how amazing and super connected our journeys are, like, despite the distance, you know,
despite,
like,
we always reconnect. Yeah.
So
because Issa's in Puerto Rico right now.
Yeah, so I've been living in Puerto Rico for the past 5 years, but like 7-8 years ago, actually, you invited me to this forum. You know, you had went to study abroad in Senegal, and like, life-changing, right?
Yeah.
And so after coming, after that form, it was just like, I need to go somewhere. I don't want to give up yet on school and life, but this right here isn't working for me right now. So maybe I just need to go somewhere. And so I went and ended up in Puerto Rico, which has probably been the best thing ever. It's not been the easiest, but definitely the best thing.
Wow, that's amazing. I feel like when we move, something happens. Like when we move from one place to another, even if it's in the same city, just moving from one energetic space to another, it can open up so many doors. Yeah, I was really happy I went to Senegal, because, you know, you get to go back home. Like, it's Africa, you get to go back home. But also it just showed me, like, my idea of people living differently is confirmed. It's not all like what we see in America. People do live successfully different. And that was good for me. That was good for my eyes, my heart. That was
good. And it goes back to the idea, like, just, I guess the gist of this podcast is this companionship, because a lot of the times in life, we really think we're like alone or isolated in our journeys. They're like, oh, they don't know what I'm going through, right? But as we travel, as we move, as we evolve in this life, you know, we're able to connect with other beings and like-minded souls. And you're just like, oh, okay, so it's not that bad. Or, you know, we can kind of suffer through this or strive through this together. And that is encouraging, you know?
As long as you know you're not alone. Like, I felt a lot of things in my life. I feel like the worst thing I ever possibly felt was like I was alone. And it's a trick. It's not even mm-hmm. real. Like, there's mm-hmm. more people like you than there aren't. But if you're not honest about who you are, or or what you're going through, you'll never meet these people. Or you may not even give them the bravery to be honest about what they're feeling and what they're going through. In one of Rumi's poems, he said, if you put me in a rose garden, but I'm there alone, it might as well be a prison. But if you put me in a prison with a friend, it may as well be a rose garden. And it's so true. Like, you can go through pretty much anything if you have a like-hearted, a kindred soul, a friend beside you. And companionship is so important. And I'm not sure if it's just me, but I feel like my friendships are the best thing I have, like the most valuable thing that I have in my life right now, even more than the money I have or the opportunities I get, the companionships, like those moments that you and I talk and it's like, you know, once in like a 3-month period or like every quarter, I look forward to those moments because we're sharing our experience. You know, in Africa, yeah. They said, in South Africa, I should say, in the Ubuntu culture, my first introduction to Ubuntu was from Desmond Tutu. Okay. And Desmond Tutu said that they teach in Ubuntu that if you're having a solitude experience, it's not even you haven't really tapped into humanity. Like if you're in your own apartment, painting your own pictures, writing your own poem, it's not until you sit with a friend.
Yeah, man.
And you share that poem and you share that painting, and you share that idea. Now you're experiencing humanity.
Yeah, community is so important, and especially like growing up like in Liberian community and then always seeking that, you know, we always want to identify, and also just the fact of these communities, this like Ubuntu like collective idea, right? It's not something, I think we're so used to like when sisters grow up in the West and in the United States of America and stuff like that, we want to be very independent and individualist and do everything by ourselves. But we realize that community is very important, especially in these times in the pandemic where we have to like really be social distant if you can, you know, and try to be present with ourselves, which is really hard because we're so, I guess, interacting with so much people with the work and life, and we had to really slow down. And then this time is really helping us remember like what is our true, or who are like our community, where are we going, how are they healing, how are we checking in with each other, because I think it definitely affects us all differently, and we all once again want to make sure that we're doing okay. But it's so hard, especially for me, since I left, you know what I'm saying? I left and I had to make a new sense of community in Puerto Rico, which was, it's like, if on the outside looking in, it's great. You know what I'm saying? I'm a people's person. I'm, you know, very friendly and I'm very open, because I think growing up, I was super sheltered. And once again, I think, I don't know, just leaving the mainland, stepping out of my comfort zone allowed me to really become more of myself, you know, instead of trying to just put up all these like walls. And so coming into myself was a challenge because, you know, I had to shed so many layers, so many like, once again, these walls, all these barriers, and then try to find a new person, a new identity with people who have crazy beautiful ideas, who have read and experienced life in different ways that I've like lived. And also I have to realize that I have this experience that I'm bringing to them. And so it was like, you know, at first obviously like a culture like shock but clash, but then once we all began to really understand each other and where we were both coming from, like in my whole sense of searching for community, it became enriching. And now as I look over, like reflect over these past 5 years, it's just like, wow, each stage, you know, I've been able to really come more into myself. Why? Because my community has really like, I guess, evolved over the time. They have really come and supported me, and if it wasn't for my community, I wouldn't been able to survive here, especially after Maria, you know, especially after many of the things. And it's the community, it's really the friends that, you know, even if you don't get to talk to them often because we're all on our different journeys in life, but at the end of the day when we do get to check in, at the end of the day when we get to check in with one another, it's all love and it's always space for support. And you were mentioning early before we started recording, like even how Jesus was like very particular with who he picked and his disciples, think about like who's gonna be the community that like lifts me, even one of them, his like first miracles, like this man was lame and his friends lifted him on the top of a roof for Jesus to be able to like see and hear. Like who's the people who's really about to lift you up when you down and lame and can't do, like who's there for you? So I look forward for, and I'm grateful for the people who have lifted me up, you know, when I couldn't or I didn't even realize my own life. And like people like you who have just been so sweet and there and supportive to remind me, you know, my power and take me, you know, higher than where I am. So yeah, community and my travel and all this, once again, thanks to you for just being open and being beautiful and sharing your art and your passions, because, you know, I didn't feel alone. And that one spark, that one, I guess things that we're passionate about has inspired other people, and other people will be inspired, and other people will find, you know, their purpose because of true companionship.
That story about Jesus though, like that, that's one of the, like, I think the most sweet stories in the Bible, not necessarily even about Jesus, about the friends that lifted their homeboy up. They was like, nah. Mm-hmm. Wasn't there like a line or something?
Yeah, it was like so many people. Uh-huh.
They was like, you about to crowd surfing.
He just got to touch you. You know what I'm saying? And that's what we need though in this life of sin. It's just like those real ones. Yeah, man. It's a beautiful thing when you find them. I mean, it's also, yes, heartbreaking when some friendships don't last as long, but it's seasons. You know what I'm saying? We can't always care. That was a hard thing for me to realize when I moved to Puerto Rico. I think like after my first year, because I was trying to be in so many places at once, specifically, you know, being in Puerto Rico and Georgia, right? And trying to make home and be present here, but also trying to like be home and present in Georgia, even though I didn't go for like a whole year. Like I would only go home like once a year. And that was draining to really try to, you know, that fear of missing out and, you know, thinking that, oh, you don't want to lose your friends, but also you're losing people who are here who really want to be with you, but you're worried, you know, we're not present enough. And I think one of those things I'm really grateful that the COVID experience has taught me is just to be really present in the moment and be grateful for this stillness. To realize that, you know, we've endured so much, you know what I'm saying, to get here, and we're gonna miss out this moment because we're always seeking for the next moment, or we're always thinking so much in the past. So it's just like just being able to be still,
just be here. Oh man, so much of what you just said, but first of all, I cannot believe you've only been in Puerto Rico 5 years. Like you've done some amazing things. You finished what I think that was your second degree, your master's, and then you started your doctor's program, and then you got married, and you started teaching. Like that was a great move for you, Issa. I'm so proud of you.
Yeah, that's just God.
Did you speak Spanish before you went to Puerto Rico?
So I like to think that, right? I like to think that, yes, I was able to pass on my test and everyone was like, how? But you get here and you're like, well, my Spanish ain't like this people's Spanish. Oh, okay. So, you know, it was a very interesting relationship where like I would have people only speak to me in Spanish and I would just answer in English because like I was better at understanding. And then like when my alter ego would come out, like I would be like always only speaking Spanish. And like the next day when people would meet me, they're like, ah, hablando yo. So you met my alter ego, Isabel. Amazing. She has no fear, but tonight, like right now I'm Issa, she's present and I'm gonna speak to you in English. I hope you don't mind. Right, so just switching back and forth. But so I've always kind of known, because my neighbors are Mexican, my childhood best friend was Mexican, and I've always had this love since I didn't speak my mother's language, Vi, right? So in Liberia as well, this like conflict, like complicated relationship with the languages and English, you know, just erasure, right? So and I never learned Vi, and so since my neighbors and my best friends were Spanish, I said, well, I'm gonna learn Spanish. So I could understand always, and I always forced them. And so when I came to Puerto Rico, it was the same. But you know, my joke I like to say, so silly, but you know, people are like, oh, I want to come to Puerto Rico, learn Spanish. I'm like, well, if you come to Puerto Rico, learn Spanish, that's just like going to Jamaica to learn English. I'm not saying you're not gonna learn English or you're not gonna learn Spanish. We're in the Caribbean, you know what I'm saying? So you go, there's perfectly speaking, you know, Jamaican people, and obviously with both the form of patois. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that the Spanish in Puerto Rico, there's no official name of it. We don't call it a Creole or patois, it's Spanish, but obviously we're in a Caribbean space where the pronunciation is different, the slang is different, the vocabulary is different from other countries. Many different Spanish-speaking countries use different words. So is English and you know, Europe and all that fun stuff. So just the variation of language. And I didn't realize that once again until I got here. So in my mind, I was like, yeah, I know Spanish, right? And I get here, I'm like, oh, you know Mexican-American Spanish,
girl. Wow, crazy. So
then I picked up on Puerto Rican, like
saying, I know English, and it's like, no, you know Jamaican English, like that's a different breed. Yeah, wow, I never even thought about that. So do you like poetry in Spanish better or in English better?
So complicated, right? So what attracted me, I know it's like, ooh, it's so hard. So what really, really, really got me was when I got here in 2013, I was able to study abroad, and I took like 3 linguistics classes I took like 2 linguistic classes. I took 1 poetry class and I took a Spanish class, right? To like get me up to level. And my creative writing class was amazing because I was able to like read poets that I'd never even knew existed, but also hear and go to different like slams. And Puerto Rican Spanish is so beautiful. It's just like, but when I came back from my master's, and I ended up in the English department. I originally started in Estudio Hispanico, which is Hispanic studies. But at the time, once again, I wasn't as confident in my Spanish writing skills, you know, because at that point, when I finally moved back, I could speak it and understand fine, but writing. So you have to think about being in graduate school, writing like pages of essays, reading tons of books a week. And I'm like, my Spanish is so much better if we just talk face to face, you know? And, because of a poem I wrote about my Blackness in Puerto Rico and Puerto Rico being a Black woman, I shared it with a professor, and she told me about the PhD program that I'm in now and the English department. And I was like, there's an English department? Like, what? Not even realizing that the creative writing class that I took and the linguistic class I took were in the English department. But I didn't know this because like when I was in the program, you know, the directors, they do all these planning for you. So we didn't really have to do much. And that's how I got into the English department, met my mentor, who's from Ghana, Donna Bankulbong, and I took Caribbean women's fiction with him. The rest is history. I got into Caribbean poetry, Caribbean fiction that just changed my life. You know, I saw myself and I saw my culture reflected. I saw my friends reflected that I never felt in a way before. And it just brought me home, and it really made me proud of my like Liberian roots that I didn't feel like I was able to really outside of my family, you know, like your family community, right? I did never got to really embrace or read much about it because you grew up in the school, our curriculum does not teach us anything. And I was never really connected with the curriculum because I felt, well, all they're talking about these slavery stuff, and I know my family wasn't like this, so these are lies. So in my mind, everything was a lie. I did what I had to do to pass the test, and I just forgot it all because it wasn't important to me. But what became important to me was Caribbean literature. And a lot of people are like, well, how the hell, you know, you're not from the Caribbean. I'm like, yeah, but I'm African. And there's so many African traditions here. And seeing how they just reflect their story, seeing how they deal through their healing, seeing how they invoke their spiritual practices, their foods, like their senses, many things that just I've endured. And also, like I said, was able to see and understand a lot of my friends growing up because a lot of my friends are Jamaican, you know, they were like Haitian growing up. And so I was able to just know different spaces through these texts, and it just felt right.
Wow. I remember the first time I ever saw patois written in like an academic textbook.
Same.
And I opened it and it was like, we, where ya go. And I was like, wow, it's a real language. But it wasn't until I saw it, you know, presented like that. And it made me feel a lot more confident about our language. I was, 'cause, I mean, even in Jamaica, you get reprimanded if you speak Patois too much, like too mm-hmm. well. Like they try to like clean it up and you say,
yep.
it's not where y'all go, it's where are you going? But yeah. then, because it was an anthropologist, a French anthropologist, he wrote a book about how the Jamaican language, the Patois, it was arranged in an African mind. Like the reason that we put which part you day instead of where are you, mm-hmm. it's like we're thinking from an African mind using the English language, so we're doing our best. Exactly. You know, and so it's kind of like when I hear people from other like languages speaking English and they're arranging the words differently than we would do it in English, but I still mm-hmm. know what they're saying. But they're just arranging the words differently, and that's what we do in Jamaica. So when I saw it in this text, in this book, I was like, wow. And it was so like thought out, because you know he would have like he put the Patois sentence in one column, he arranged in the very next column the way that they would say it in Ghana in the Akan language. And then he put the English, anyway, there were three different columns, one for Caribbean Patois, one for the African West African language, and then one in the standard English. Mm-hmm. And he was basically just showing us how Patois came, how it's a real language, and it's a real thing, and it's a real mind, it's a real mind filtering another culture, but still keeping their culture.
Girl, there was a website I had, and like it's like I used it like 2 years ago, but I will send it to you after, and. Where, because I took a Creole linguistic class my first year of the PhD program, and like so like one of my projects was pretty much exactly what you said, and I was like pretty much dissecting the use of, oh my gosh, this word is, oh Lord Jesus, forgive me, it's like linguistics is not my topic, so I don't feel too bad, but it was just, like you said, the placement of the word. And so I did like analysis of Girls Them Sugar, and I was just like you said, the form of the Diablo, what is the word, it's like on the tip of my tongue but it's not there, but anyway, I'll send you this list, and pretty much this list is and this is another reason why I also stopped calling my mother's language a dialect, because growing up our language that we call it dialects, we don't think yeah. there's any problem of it yeah. but as I took the course, I realized that by us calling it dialects, we're robbing it, saying that, oh well, this is not good enough to be considered a language. Why is that yeah. right,
when in actuality it's genius. It's like you just took someone's language and kept yours intact. How'd you do that?
Same thing with Ebonics, you know what I'm saying? So Creole's the same with all languages. We all Patois, before they become Creole, started off with just a form of being able to communicate with two different people who speak two different languages. The lengua franca that becomes in between is the Patois. When the Patois turns into the language you're taught into the child, that's when it becomes a Creole, technically, right? So yeah. that's when the language is birthed into, taught into another child, that's when it's like, you know, the Creole stage, right? So all of that is amazing, because it's so different forms of resistance, right? These things that are nurtured in our food, and the way we speak, and the way we dance, exactly. what we write, how we read our poetry, how we write, all of this are forms of resistance. You know, I think these that have been shaped and not, they can't be erased through us. And so, yes, sometimes we try to speak, quote unquote, whatever, proper Americanized or Europeanized, yeah. or whatever yeah. the hell. Right, but we have our true self comes out of our forms of art, the different ways that we express ourselves. And so, yeah, man, like that's what I think is really important, especially this day and age, that we really kind of sit with ourselves and try to like figure out where our families came from. Like, I also wish, I don't know if you had this, I was telling a friend growing up, like I have many pictures, but we don't have videos. And I wish we had video recordings of us, especially as younger, so I could hear how we were talking, how they're interacting, because all of these things are important. Because I recently have been mentored with the Liberian poet, Patricia Jebba Wesley. And she's amazing, super great. And there was some word that I was like, oh, something whatchamacallit. And she was like, wow. Like, and she took me on like this whole historical lesson that like, oh, the Congo people, when they came and blah, 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 and they're the only ones who kind of use this type of word. And just like this lesson, you're just like, wow, so there's words that we use that also like kind of signify certain types of class, certain type of experiences. You're just like, I just didn't even know this, right? So right. You're always thinking you're wanting more. And I don't know. It's just interesting. And also frustrating how, once again, the arts our writings aren't heavily studied and aren't shared, like how, you know what I'm saying, the greats or the known people are, yeah. Because we would be more solid in ourselves, you know what I'm saying, and we would be able to explore more variations of ourselves. But because we only know like these like binary ways of life, whenever we live outside of those binaries, whenever we explore life and we reclaim our traditions, because you think about our ancestors and like the beginning of colonization and, you know, and adapting and assimilating all of this stuff, they were still able to still learn like that. That's fucking powerful, right? They were able to learn the way of this like whole new culture, but still keep their truth in some way, hide it in there, versus the colonizers just can't conform. They just say it's my word, no way, versus really, really learning, right? There's a power that we have. Like, even, like, gente who are, like, santeros and all that stuff in Cuba, like, they never really gave up their religion. They just said, okay, I'm gonna put up this picture of your saint to make you feel good, but we know what's going on in this house over here, right?
Yeah.
And that, I don't know, man, that's some true resilience. That's some power that I hope, I don't feel like, once again, we have to hide ourselves anymore, because we're obviously in a time period where we're definitely trying to decolonize ourselves, reclaim, you know, all of our traditions, you know, and definitely make space for ourselves so that when our children grow up, it shouldn't be so damn hard for them to really know who they are and know who our greats are and know these names.
Yeah. And to feel...
Why are you waiting to get your PhD to know this? Like, what? I should be knowing this when I'm a child.
Yeah. That part. Because if I was never curious, you know, I went into somebody's library one day. It was actually this white man. He was like the super of my complex. And he had me waiting in his living room while he was taking care of something. And I saw this library just like full of, I mean, the library was like the size of a living room wall. It was so huge. And he saw me looking at it when he came back and he said, would you like to take a look? And I did. And I found some of the books I'm still reading right now. And this was years ago. This was years ago. I found this book. Here it is. It's called Discourses on Colonialism. And I took it out of his library along with that
book. Am I sincere? Is that Am I sincere's book?
Yeah.
Yeah, I did got that book.
It is.
I was like, wait, I know that book.
Did you read that one?
I haven't read it in its entirety, but I've read sections from it throughout my graduate degree. Yeah, and I recently bought my own copy like a month ago and it just came. But I've read different like chapters of it, but I had that physical copy. Yes.
Yeah, but like you were saying, like you shouldn't have to like get lucky and be in somebody's library one day and finally for the first time see patois in a book.
Yeah.
I also found this play that was published by the University of the West Indies, I believe. And in the play, I don't remember exactly how it went. There was a guy who came to town and he tricked everybody. And it was a bunch of like hoopla, but it was all in patois. And it was my first time ever reading a book that was from front to cup, from the cover to the end in patois. And I had to be like 22.
Wow.
And I was like, oh my God. It's like,
how did that make you feel?
Man, it made me feel legit. It made me feel like, you know, like,
exactly.
And I know that it doesn't matter, like, if somebody
puts
you in a book, but there is something that happens when you read. It's so different than when you hear, and it does something different to your brain. And I remember I took the book to New York and I sat in my grandma's bed and I read her the play until she fell asleep. And I was just like, this is the sweetest moment in my life. And I needed this book. And this man just had it sitting in his library. He was like, you know, if you like it, you could take it. He had this Discourse on Colonialism, the book I was telling you about with the anthropology who did all of the compare and analysis on the languages and also something, I think like The Negro and the Law, which was like this huge book that was like way too smart for me. And it was just like running circles around me. And then,
girl, I mean, you know, that's another frustrating thing about academia though. Like, I mean, hopefully the text I'm managing was by like a Black scholar too, but like sometimes it's like really frustrating to get to text, you know, and you're like, wow, this seems like it's a little bit above me, right? Because it was made for a language for someone who, you know, they wasn't expecting us Black people to be reading about us, you know, they wasn't writing this stuff for us to understand, and they're writing it for them to understand. That's why it's also important for, and I try to like not give up, because sometimes I'll be wanting to like quit, because it's just like this space is very toxic. But you know, you find scholars, and like, you know what I'm saying, right now people are just publishing and writing and doing their thing in their own voice and being able to, like I said, merge and speak their truth, right? So you don't have to try to be in right so that you feel like, oh, it's too smart for me. Fuck no. It's because they're trying to make it not accessible for everybody. And the fact that, you know, that's just, you know what I'm saying? Like, intelligence is supposed to be universal. It's not supposed to be only for someone who can come to a fucking university. And so that's why my goal is, you know, I mean, obviously, yes, we would all want to have tenure and stuff like that. But if I don't, I think I'll be fine. I really want to definitely be this bridge that we always wish to be between community and university. And like, you know, I definitely don't feel like sometimes worthy. I don't feel sometimes like I have the vocab or a certain experiences or whatnot, but I'm here, you know what I'm saying? And obviously, see, eventually, if I stay true, if I'm consistent with it, I'll find what works for me. Not really, so I don't really care like what they're saying or how they're saying, but make sure I can express myself, help share my people's story, let them feel motivated to do that, make space and learn how to get the resources to do that. Because, you know, we're so powerful, we're so brilliant, and the stories are already in our bodies. They want to come out. But we don't have the time to do it because we gotta pay bills.
Yeah.
We gotta make
space.
We gotta do this. We gotta do that.
And that's why it's so important for some of us to stay in art. To stay in the art. Because, you know, I think especially when I was growing up, like eventually my family came around to like me and art. But prior to that, they were just like, just study law. You'd be a great lawyer. You can retain information really well. You like to argue, you know. I'm like, who was that? But with art,
doctor, lawyer, engineer.
Lawyer, engineer, exactly. Or get married, right?
But the art should be the first one, right? Art should definitely be the first one.
For me, personally, I need that. I need to know what art people were doing when they didn't have the foot of the beast on their neck. I need to know what life was like for them. Because if I don't know, then I just become, you know, Edward Blyden, who also was at the Liberian University. Edward Blyden, he had this concept, he called it the African personality. He's from
Virgin Islands, by the way.
Yeah, isn't he from St. Thomas?
St. Thomas,
He went to Liberia because America was hating, but it's all good. And he had this concept. He was like, you know, the African personality. And that resonated with me so deep. He was like, if the African gave up everything that was African, they would have nothing left to give to the world. And this was what he coined it, the African personality. And he wrote a lot about like how to retain some of your Africanness in this world, and how not only should you, but you must, or else you'll become disposable.
Yep.
And he's like, that's what makes you valuable to the world, is your African personality. And he wrote, you know, all kinds of literature on it, but it touched me like so deep in my heart. I was like, oh, I'm done with y'all. Like, y'all don't know who Edward Blyden is, but I do, okay? I'm reading his literature, so you may not understand the path I'm on, but somebody did.
This goes back to what I said, like the companionship, because you read something that you're like, wow, someone knows, and now you're sharing this with me, you know what I'm saying? I'm sure you shared it with other people, and that knowledge circulates and it motivates, and once again, we find encouragement because we're not taught, like I said, our scholars, or we're not really taught to really pay attention. We're not even... Sometimes even people don't even know, you know? So when we come to this knowing, it's always nice to be able to share. Jesus, like I have so many hopes for, you know, my children and my children's children and my students. And I definitely try to teach them like, you know, don't try to conform or try to think that the answers are living in the States, because, you know, unfortunately, this is a commonwealth, you know, and they always have, some people have this illusion of success is obviously going to the mainland, but there's so much power. And like you said, that uniqueness of your culture that you have. I mean, if you try to be more like them and less like yourself, you have, what do you have to offer, right? There's so many of them. There's so many of the robots up there.
And
so
the culture is dry.
Hello.
The culture is dry.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, be you, find about your people, man. It's just like, it's so crazy because it's like, I'll travel if you can. But there's ways, because, you know, I didn't come for money. You know what I'm saying? I didn't come for, I never knew that I was going to travel. I started traveling at 21 years old. You understand? So it's like, what I've done has been in the past 8 years, and that's just been God. Because I also feel like when you're definitely, like, when you walk in your purpose, you know what I'm saying, and you really go and you have that faith, like, you will get that support, you know what I'm saying? God will make a way. But I think when we really try to go out of our will and out of his will and, like, really try to just make things shape, faced with so many challenges, you know, connecting with the people, like you said, who may not be aligned with us, and it looks good, like the flesh is very appealing, right? Mm-hmm. But there's something bothering your spirit, there's something that's just not there yet. And, you know, when we really are able to sit with ourselves, find our truths, find our people, it's much easier. You're gonna have, you know what I'm saying, your temptations, but I feel like you know how to be able to move forward, you know how to find your balance, you know how to find your peace, you know.
I feel like when I was younger, I struggled with that more. Like trying to be something I'm not, just for the comfort that it brings because it's convenient. But a person who is remotely tapped into their spirit won't be able to do that for long. It'll drive them crazy.
I have a question. So were you like that because you felt like you were trying to be maybe more American at a younger age than, because I feel like, or what? I don't know. I don't want to.
Well, yeah, because American would be normal, right? Like mm-hmm. the normal culture. It's not normal to be interested in Malcolm X at age 7.
In certain communities, but they make us think that it's wrong, and that's what we got us messed up. You know what I'm saying? If we were in spaces that were enriching us and encouraging us, that's normal. You know what I'm saying? Because there are certain communities where everybody, you know.
Yep. And instead of discouraging it or being like, oh, that's weird. You know, mm-hmm. instead of that, you could be like, hey, this kid has a gift. Let me put this kid in these kind of programs, you know? And then, so because I didn't really feel like I had that around me, I just mm-hmm. started to, like, you know, do something else. Like, mm-hmm. I used to watch Paris Hilton and, like, try mm-hmm. to figure out, like, how, like, okay, how do you be a girl? You remember that show, The Simple Life? Because, even among my peers, I just always felt like, man, maybe like I need to be different, or like, you know, and it was all a mind trick, because like I said, the moment that you're confident enough to be honest about who you are and that fear dissolves, or sometimes you just put it in the background, it doesn't really dissolve, but you step mm-hmm. forward and you say, you know what, I'm really interested in knowing about social stratification, or I'm really interested in knowing about Africa pre-colonization, then there might be somebody, you know, in the back of the class like, hey, me too, and then you too can go be interested in that together. Right. But I think I was too concerned about what the majority was interested in. And I just wanted to be normal. And so that's what that was about. But the moment, you know what I did? I ended up putting people like Edward Blyden on, I read this book called Think and Grow Rich. And he was talking about a board. Like if you created a board, you could actually create a board of people who are not here anymore. And he talked about how he put Abraham Lincoln on his board. Interesting. And I was like, shit. I got a lot of people I want on my board. So I remember, especially when I first started my nonprofit, I got a legit like board that you can like push pins in. And I printed out pictures of Marcus Garvey, Harriet Tubman, Nefertiti, Edward Blyden. And I put them on this little board. And I was like, shit, I might as well. And it worked. I started feeling like I wasn't alone anymore. And do you know what happened? I met Kwame Ture's son here in Atlanta. Wow. And then I met Edward Blyden's grandson here. Wow. I ran into, what was her name? She was the lawyer for Huey P. Newton. her name slips me right now, but I just ran into her randomly. Like, all these people started coming into my, and it was because I had the nerve to be honest about who and what I am. And, you know, implore a few techniques, you know, to make it feel more real, because I was so used to feeling like a weirdo, or like, you know.
Yeah. And I hate that, because we're not encouraged. And like you said, we have so many gifts, and unfortunately, the teachers who don't have the time, they see these gifts as distractions, or we have mental whatever, and they want to put us in pull-out classes. They want to try to medicate our children, all this stuff, instead of really just challenging us and giving something to us that can really push us and make, like, I had you know, good mentors growing up, like older a little bit, but I really wish, like, I would have had who I had now, like when I was younger, because I really, really, really would have known more, right? And it's just like, You know,
I feel you.
So yes. I can't wait. You know what I'm saying? They're gonna be like, T.T. Amber, like, what you got? Who we gotta study today? Who we need to know today?
I mean, like,
and that's how it has to be. You know what I'm saying? In those senses of community, that form of generational knowledge that we're sharing and passing down, and even that traditional thing of storytelling, being able to sit with an elder and listen. You know what I'm saying? Be able to, like, and like you said, you were mentioning earlier of the. There's a difference in obviously hearing a word and receiving, you know, and then also reading it. I feel like those both have their healing powers, especially depending on the mindset that you are. But to be able to hear and then read it, there is just something like powerful in that. And we need to be able to understand. We need to be able to sit and know who our elders are. We need to be able to have our peers to be excited about, you know, this just movement, because it's for a lifetime. This is not okay because we're just in the decade of Afrodescendencia and none of like that for the African.
Yeah.
No, this is forever. This is how we have to move forward. We can no longer play the game of, oh, I didn't know. We have to come into a knowing, and we have to find peace in knowing ourselves. And also there's so much power in that, because I feel like the fact that, like you said, you put certain names or these people on the board and certain things come, there's so much like power into being able to speak what we're looking for, being able to write these things into power. And so once we all tap into this, once we all encourage our people to realize that power, more things will fall into line. We have to be more in line to it. We also have to be still to listen, because sometimes, you know, the Lord be telling us to do stuff and we be like,
exactly,
in our own way.
Netflix.
It's not in the box I went into, but this book, like, it's crazy. Of how many, once again, books I have, right? So I'm just like cleaning out my storage and just life and trying to figure out what books am I going to focus on. These are going to be for my dissertation, right? There's different topics I have to be tested in. And I'm cleaning out and I'm finding like essays and books of things that my professor gave me years ago. Some of them, like, I remember skimming. Some of them I don't even remember how they got to me. And I'm like, it's crazy. It's just crazy how, you know, once again, everything that we need is already inside of us. We really just kind of don't realize it. We're always trying to, like, once again, think about this future. So realizing that I had all these books, all these texts, all these names already, but I had to do the work. I had to sit with myself and not expect everyone to just come and give it to me. And I think expecting people were going to just give things to me or give me this information was something I had to learn. And it was actually, like, frustrating, because you feel like, I'm naturally gifted, I'm naturally creative, I'm naturally knowing, right? It shouldn't be that hard. But you realize, like, no, but you gotta study, you know what I'm saying? But you gotta
you really do. You know what I've been praying for lately? And then I want to hear a poem from you, if you don't mind. What I've been praying for lately is a natural progression of goodness, because there's a balance there, right? Because sometimes I'll go super hard, I'll start studying, like, and then I'll be like, oh yeah, poetry. Because, so basically what I've been praying for is a natural progression, a sustainable progression. And that has, for me, that means poetry. Because if poetry is not involved in all my studies, it's really like a waste. Because even like, okay, so when I was studying all these things, which, you know, even when I was acting like I wasn't like I was still listening to reggae music. and I was still taking notes, you know? So I've always been like interested in colonization and how it's affected us and what life was like prior to that. But it wasn't until 2016 when I started reading Rumi's work that I actually started feeling like a living being. Like I truly am here. Like I'm deep within myself. And prior to that, it was just, you know, I always found a reason to be alive and something to be passionate about, but it came to a point where I really didn't know if I wanted to live or not anymore. And then I was in the hospital and I was just scrolling and I saw this post that I did in 2014. And it was like, allow yourself to be pulled by the thing that you truly love. It's like a strange pull, but don't ignore it because it won't lead you astray. And I was like, who is this man that I posted in 2014? So I started like Googling his stuff. And when I tell you, like, the life that I had been longing for was like flourishing, like a flower, like opening up in my chest. And I was like, what is this, God? So I've found now that instead of purely focusing on historical documentation, now there must be poetry. And I've always been a poet. When I was a child, I used to write, you know, like, God, thank you for life. I know it's light. Like, I was like making little bars, but that brought me back to the reason for life, which for me, you know how people be like, music saved my life. For me, the reason for life is poetry. So I want to hear a poem from you that you use to help you to get back into that feeling that I'm talking about.
Okay, so this is so funny. It's like, you know, like poems go with you depending on your mood. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
It's funny because even in church, like one of like my pastors was like, you know, sometimes it's not too good to always listen to like the same songs because you know what songs gonna like jump your spirit. You know what songs gonna make you shout. So it's like, it's interesting that there's some poems that obviously they definitely make me shout, but then there's some poems that you have to come through differently. You have to find different ways to always rekindle that love. You know what I'm saying? There's not, I don't know. Cause I feel like it's almost like, I guess what I'm trying to say is there's different poems. And so I didn't want to, I guess, read something that's always going. I wanted to read something that I feel like that moved me today. And it's by Jennifer Rahim, who's a Trinidad and Tobago poet from Trinidad.
Oh, I love them.
Yes. And I think this is a poem I'm going to be like, once again, for the listeners to be able to find their balance. It says, it's a poem for every day, very short, very sweet, and I like her work, very sincere. A poem for every day. All poems must mean Sunday, must be rest itself, not sleep. A poem must be awake, or else it cannot speak. Never a dream, though it could be. A poem must be what touch can feel and sight can see. A poem is fullness, what Sabbath truly means. When time is eternity, yesterday and today, present as the earth is, what it means to be after God, simply mystery. A poem is an island, never singular or complete. No, it is always neighbor, always community. To know it is to name what is there. The wise always baptize with the eyes, see, hear. This poem is so much more and nothing but itself, like an island that means rest. And it's, I don't know, that just to me is just what poetry is, what living life is, this rest that we, this community that we are, the space, the body, peace. It is an amen. A poem.
It truly is. She says. It truly is. You know, I'll share. I want to share one too as we wrap up.
Yes, please.
Rumi's work. Do you have time, Issa?
Oh, look, I'm looking. Yes, we can go.
Okay. So one of the things about Rumi's work that I feel like kept me alive was that no matter what he's talking about, he's always talking about God and how we have God in us. Like he'll describe, because like, you know, Joseph, you know, in Sufi teachings, it's taught Joseph had, you know, God had four parts beauty and gave three to Joseph. And the other one, you know, the rest of the world, you and I, we had to share that one. And then Joseph got three. So he's just so beautiful. And Rumi said, remember when Joseph walked into the corridors and the women were cutting the fruit and started cutting their fingers, but they were lost in his beauty. They didn't even realize that they were bleeding. And then Rumi said, you know, you have a beauty inside of you that would blow that man out of the water. And it's like, I have that. And so, you know, you're reading things like that and you were considering if you wanted to live or not. But when you start reading that literature, you're like, I might want to tap into this. What is this? And then you start reading about how it's God. It truly is God that's in, you know, in every human being. In all living things. So I'll say this, Rumi said the closest way, and it's a quick poem, the fastest way to untie the knots of the heart is to sit with a friend who loves this too. And you all share. And that is what I feel like just happened.
Oh, with two or three, I gathered. You know what I'm saying? This is church. This is a poem in itself, you know? And I'm totally grateful for your truth, your poetry, your openness, your heart. And by just being you, you allowed me to once again be me and just encouraging me in this friendship that we had over the years. Because it's been a long time.
Years, huh? Well, I'm so proud of you. I'm so proud of your academic focus because you're not just talking this shit. You're putting bread up. You putting money up and time up and effort up. And that's why I'm like, I fuck with her. I fuck with her because she's not playing. She's not playing around. Yeah. And so I will always respect you and appreciate you for that. So thanks, I love you, Issa. I know you have to go. Thank you so much.
I know. I'm like so mad at time right now because I'm like, this is so beautiful. What I needed, especially like, you know, with just the air, because I'm at peace, but I know the world just needs more time and space for community like this. So for all of our listeners who's listening, I hope that you find just a space and a companion to be able to like sit and be happy and share joy and love and all that stuff.
Yeah, I needed this for sure. I just untied knots. I didn't even know we're there. So thank you.
And then I'm gonna be able to be my meeting all bubbly and stuff because usually I'm super dry. Like it's the end of the day, I'm ready to go. Now I'm like, I got a poem in me. I want to do this. And then I we have to wrap up. We got to go. But this goes back to trying to make space for our writing because that's exactly what the goal is. That. You know, the work will always be me coming to the poetry. And I would love that 24 hours. This is our thing that we're just writing and painting and all life that we don't have to do the other things. But in the meantime, we got other things to do.
Yeah, like keep our culture alive.
For sure.
I love you,
wish you. Love you too. Wish you nothing but the best. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Love you, Darren.
Bye. Take care.
Peace.